If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no. Witch Police Radio.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with someone who is, we're talking about a new band here, but you're a very recognizable name and face, I think, in the local music community. You know, you were in a band, and we'll get into this in a minute, but that was very successful prior to this new project. So I think that there's a lot to talk about. And before we even get into any of it, if you want to introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what you do as an artist, that's always a good way to start.
Sure. My name is Trevor Tominski. I'm a singer and guitar player in a new band called Omens. Although maybe some people from Winnipeg remember me, they're of a certain vintage. From a band called Jet Set Satellite, where I did more or less the same details. yeah, that's really it.
Cool, cool. And I mean, obviously, we're here to talk about Omens. You have a new record that's out. This is a new band. It's exciting. But I guess I kind of want to start at a different place sure. with you than maybe I start with a lot of interviews. And that's that, you know, you have a new band, but you're also coming to it from a different place. A lot of people I talk to who have new bands are just starting out, or they just put this together. But you kind of have this history of a very successful previous band, and then some time, and then now this one. So it's almost like you're starting from scratch with a totally new project. So maybe to start with that, like, what is that like, kind of launching something totally new after you are known for this previous thing that you did over a number of years?
Yeah, you know, I mean, mostly it's really refreshing, I think. You know, just from the nature of how Jet Set Satellite kind of got signed, and it all happened in a whirlwind, you know. It was basically a project for college that I was working on, and it was one of those fairy tale stories of, you know, kind of getting struck by lightning and just the right person hearing it and fast tracking it with a label. And before you know it, like, you know, we were signed, and we hadn't even played a gig as that band yet. I gigged in other bands prior to Jet Set, you know, in my teenage years and stuff, but I hadn't, we hadn't actually played a show as Jet Set. And in fact, we didn't even have a name. It was just a project. So, you know, that going about it in that way, or I wouldn't even say going about it, it happening in that way, versus, you know, being more planful, you know, being more intentful about like what kind of a band I wanted to actually put together this time with my co-songwriter, who was also in Jet Set. He was the lead guitar player. His name is Mike Keller. And we basically sat down and were like, okay, if we were going to do this again, what would we do? How would we like set up the parameters of this? What kind of a sound would we want to have? And I think in some ways, you know, Jet Set had like a number of writers in the band. It started with myself and a partner, but it kind of grew to be more democratic than that as we expanded to a five piece. And now it came back down to two guys again with Omens, and you know, we just really crafted a little bit more. I think we're just like, you know, hopefully older, and well, we're definitely older, maybe wiser, but just you know, kind of creating some parameters for ourselves and working within those walls, I guess, a little bit more so than just chasing what might have been a good song or something like that, regardless of genre, which is often what happened with Jet Set, I think, especially in the earlier era of the band.
Do you think that this is like, do you feel like Omens is a more, I don't want to say honest, but more genuine expression of sort of your creativity, because it's not, you know, stuck in that whole kind of instant success that Jet Set was in?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think we did anything necessarily dishonest or like untrue to ourselves,
sure.
But
well, that's why I didn't want to use honest, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not really the right word, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I absolutely know what you mean. Like, I mean, there has to be some, you know, explanation in that regard, just because you don't have, the shackles are off. We're not tied to a record label.
Right.
When you're on a record label, especially in that time, you know, you were a product. And so they're weighing in. There's a group of people that are also weighing in on everything, whether it's your music videos, what songs go on the album and all that. So sure. I mean, in that regard, you know, we are completely, this is artistry at its purest form, in that we had no expectations. We're just really trying to put out the best thing that we could. And also knowing that it was a beginning of something. So we weren't like too precious with it either, if that makes sense. Like we're just sure. Like, well, like, let's just establish ourselves and get out there. We didn't like gloss over any material that we were developing in terms of putting out the album. Did something which was probably dumb and a little bit unusual these days, which is to put out a full length album and not just, you know, play to the algorithm and gods and release it a song at a time. We didn't really do that. But we did want to put like sort of a stake in the ground and say, hey, we're here, you know, and just let people know that we exist and that we're doing something a little bit different this time.
What has the response been so far to that method of not really? Because you're right, people definitely release a song at a time and they have this big planned out sort of calendar for when singles are going to come out. And you definitely did do it differently. So what's the reaction been from listeners so far to just kind of get that whole album dropped at once?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't know what people say behind our backs, but I mean, like to our faces anyways, it's been unanimously positive. And we've had a really good response with our first single called Black Magic, and we did a video for it as well. But yeah, I mean, the algorithm just kind of dies off as soon as you release the album and, you know, you're not getting added to those, playlists and things like that. So I would say it's been kind of a slow burn, just like building organically, which is fine. We're not investing in like, you know, boosters or anything like artificial to get playlist ads and things like that. Cause I just don't see the point in that. Like we're okay, like winning over people one at a time. Like, honestly, it's just like, I guess if people know that we exist and we go out there, they can make their decision for themselves as to whether what they think about us. But I would just hate for it to be completely, you know, unknown that we were out there doing this. So I guess, you know, the first starting point for us was like, well, we did have this success. It's quite a long time ago. You know, many of those people probably have moved on and are certainly not interested anymore. But we start there and see if we can draft any fans from that. Even though it's, you know, it's different what we're doing now, but I don't think it's like, you know, it's not crazy. We're not like, you know, going like, we didn't do like a radio rock band and now we're John Zorn. It's like, we're still like in the same relative genre of what we were doing before. It's just a little heavier, I think maybe, but So yeah, we started there and then we're trying to build, and we haven't even played a show yet as Omens. Our first show we're looking at is in August. So we think that'll probably, you know, get the word out too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you're right about, you know, doing it one person at a time. At least you know that way that you're genuinely getting fans, right? These are people who actually like what you're doing, and it's sort of a more one-on-one. You hear from them directly because they're, you know, they're buying something, they come to a show, they're telling you they like it, rather than just, yeah, you put some money on the internet and it goes somewhere and then maybe some likes come back and you don't know who they are and they don't, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like literally to kind of illustrate like the differences between promoting this album now and when I first started doing it. I mean, we had a couple of albums after that big one, but when the first one came out, that was like the dawn of Napster, you know? So it was like 25 years ago. And that was the first, we were kind of on that last cusp of like golden era of can rock and much music. And then, you know, you'd go to a party like, and you're still kind of like just back off tour and people are like, oh yeah, I downloaded your album for free off Napster. And it's like, gee, thanks. You know, and so, so to go from that to now, you know, we've obviously, you know, we're audiophiles ourselves. We've kept up with the evolution of everything, but just haven't really been actively promoting anything for at least 15 years, I would say at least. And so it's a learning curve, but we had, you know, very moderate expectations. And so I would say it's already in some ways exceeded what we may have expected. And then, you know, but we're still very hungry and we're still in this for the long haul. Like we have a very, really nice chemistry going on between the band members right now that feels like, you know, it could go a few albums for sure.
Cool. Well, that's a good thing to have. I think.
Your shadows cross the line. What's left of me ain't mine.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about the sound and then how it is similar to, you know, what people know you for before this project, obviously. And I think you're right too. I was listening to it today before we did this conversation, and I mean, it definitely has the same. It's heavy. It's got big hooks, which was kind of the hallmark of Jet Set. But yeah, I think it does sound heavier and maybe a little more leaning into almost less into the radio side of things and more into something different. But the hooks are still there, right? You're still writing songs that have that kind of. I guess that's kind of a you can't lose that, right? Once you've learned how to do that.
Honestly, like in terms of just like being true to yourself and to what you know drives you, I guess, and maybe some of our influences. But like, yeah, I can only do like as a singer and as a lyricist and everything like that. I can only do what I can do. Like I'm a huge fan of bands like. You know, Mets and the Jesus Lizard and Idols and Killing Joke and stuff like that. I can never do that stuff. Like if I did, it would be disingenuous, you know, like,
right.
I love those bands. Like they're some of my favorite bands that I just listed off that's not what comes natural to me. I think more in the sort of arena of what, Mike and I do together, like his sort of where he goes to, where I go to. You know, we definitely had a gentleman's agreement that we're like, well, we're not gonna like trim these songs down right to their, you know, radio edit essence. We're gonna like leave a little fat, a little meat on the bone, and maybe include a couple songs that we wouldn't have normally because texturally or they kind of fill out a little bit of an idea for listeners as to like where the band could go, you know, like whether that's just like a little bit of a almost like psychedelic elements or like something slightly stoner rocky, like, you know,
sure.
we're sort of starting to like put some colors down and go, yeah, like this thing's very much, you know, an object that's going to erode and evolve over the next little while. And, but like, so we didn't try to carve it down to its essence just yet. Cause I feel like there's a lot of things we're still kind of exploring.
Okay. Do you hear, I mean, yeah, I know you said, you know, you write what you write, the way you write, and that comes out how it does. But you know, some of these bands you mentioned, like the Jesus Lizard, I would never have expected,
yeah,
having heard your previous band and having heard this record, that was something you were into. I mean, it's a great band, but do you hear elements of some of that stuff that you're influenced by in the songs that's maybe on a subconscious level or more buried than what people will hear on the surface?
Not them necessarily, like, but
right,
you know,
but that heavier, noisier stuff, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, I find it funny that the Jesus Lizard, they mentioned Led Zeppelin as their, like, one of their main influences, and you'd think, but it does kind of make sense when you get into the band and some of the arrangements and things that they do. But I can't say that I hear any Jesus Lizard, but like bands like, you know, Helmet and maybe, sure, like, you know, Soundgarden for sure, like Bad Motorfinger era Soundgarden. Like I can hear some of that in our stuff, you know, and it's not conscious, but it's almost impossible to avoid because it's just part of my, like, the fabric of my soul at this point, some of those records. And, you know, Danzig's always there for me, and Monster Magnet, you know, where we don't go as spacey or psychedelic as some of those bands, but The Failure is another band that's a huge influence on me. So I don't know. It's like this weird, musical brain soup, that we're playing with, you know, but I sometimes people hear things and I go, yeah, I can hear that. And then other times, like, you know, it comes out of left field. So.
Sure. Sure. Well, I guess there's that saying too, that, you know, whatever music you listen to within a certain age range, that's kind of what you're stuck with as being permanently kind of embedded in your brain. And it sounds like those are probably some of the bands that are there for you, right?
For sure. Like, yeah, that, like, again, like mid-90s, like hard rock metal type stuff. I mean, I listen to a lot of contemporary stuff too, but I don't find it working into my music. It's probably just my limited abilities, to be honest, that I'm stuck where I am. But you know, we really like tried to set out. I think there was a little bit of frustration with Jet Set and managing the amount of writers and just that group dynamic, that we didn't have an album that we were completely happy with front to back. And I would say this is one where it feels more cohesive. I think we are happier with it front to back. And yet there's still, you know, we can always best it. You know, we're thinking about the next one already and what we probably do differently, but we're pretty happy with how it turned out so far.
Well, how long have these songs been in the works? Like how long have you actually been working on this project up until the release date?
Yeah, we started about 2 years ago. I moved back to Winnipeg. I was living in Toronto for about 14 years, I guess. And I moved back to Winnipeg and rekindled my relationship with Mike, the guitar player. And we just kind of, you know, we had some early discussions and then we just said, okay, like, you know, this obviously has to play a different priority in our lives. We don't know where it's going, but like maybe it'd be cool to do something. And so we'd get together like every second Tuesday, but we were like really like stuck to it. And so every second Tuesday, we just like, you know, roll tape, just recording our jam sessions or whatever you want to call them. We basically just sat across from each other with acoustic guitars actually. And we just started, you know, comparing riffs, putting stuff together, seeing what would fit together and crafting songs. And, you know, three or four started to take shape and started to feel like they had a relationship with one another. Started to feel like they were at the core of maybe something bigger. And so we just started to try and build off of it. And yeah, after about a year and a half, we had about 10 songs, we had about 10 songs and we thought, well, we can't really go much further without getting a drummer. And he knew somebody and he knew this drummer named Don Jacks. He came in and just like, it just fit like a glove. He just, you know, spoke the same musical language and took everything up to the next level. And we joke because we found out in knowing him that he has an uncle or a relative that wrote the song Seasons in the Sun, Terry Jacks.
Oh, cool. Okay.
From Winnipeg and like is one of the biggest pop singles of all time. So we always joke that he's got it in his blood, this songwriting DNA, like that. So Yeah. But we just recently, just this weekend, actually, we were running auditions for bassists, and we just found our bass player too. So we have a full lineup now.
Cool. We'll be right back. How, I know you haven't played a show yet with this project, like you said, but how much are these songs, the way they're written, the way they're performed on the album, is it easy to transfer that to live, or do you have to kind of rework them at all to be able to perform them live? Like, do you have a bunch of extra guitars on there or other things that are kind of you have to tweak when you bring it to the stage?
No, actually, there's a little bit of extra guitar, but really not much. I have to credit my partner Mike Keller for that. He was also producing, mixing, and mastering it, and he was very judicious when I wanted to, like, maybe look at doing a keyboard part or throwing on an extra vocal or something like that. And he's like, let's just really try and keep it to, at that point we were just a three piece, so he was playing bass as well, and so he tracked all the bass, and it was just like whatever Mike and Don and I could kind of physically do. There's very minimal overdubs, so it represents itself very well live. So I'm excited to take it out to people that are, for the few people that might come out and see us that are familiar with the record. I think they're going to be really surprised.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of longer term plans as far as what's happening with this, or are you just going to sort of taking it one step at a time with releases out? Now you're going to do a show and then see what happens after that.
Well, I mean, some people that might be listening to this might think this is naive, but what we're going to try and do is hotwire the algorithm a little bit. And, I don't know if we would release our second album the way we did with our first. We still firmly believe that we needed a foundation there to, plant a stake in the ground and say, hey, we're here. But I think in the meantime, we're going to start recording some covers of just like songs that we like, some stuff that might be expected, some stuff that might be unexpected, and just try to get a cadence developed of releasing a few things that might draft off of some of their fans, bring new people into our music. And I know that's not like exactly rocket science at this stage of the game. A lot of artists do it, but we're going to do it too. And we'll probably start releasing new music sooner than people would expect to. In terms of original music, I think we'll start, maybe even before the end of the year, releasing new songs one at a time rather than putting out a collection. And then after we've put out a few, then maybe we'll gather it into something and put it out. But yeah, we're just feeling our way through this, like, honestly, it's just a completely different way of trying to get ears on your music.
Yeah. And you have the experience, obviously, of having done this in the CD era, the end of the CD era,
yeah,
and now into this weird, dystopian future of streaming. So yeah,
totally. Yeah. It's very, very different. And yet, like, there's some really, really amazing things, like doing shows like this, where it's like, greater access to things like this, and having deeper conversations than, that 4 minute stock radio
soundbite
thing, which is just kind of annoying. I mean, it's not really, it's not really about the music, so this is much more gratifying.
Well, that I'm glad. Thanks. That brings up another question, though, is that, one of the good things about, I'm definitely a Luddite. I still listen to physical media. I don't know how to use streaming services.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, but I'm set in my ways. But one of the greatest things I think about the internet has kind of made it so the bar to entry for so many musicians is gone. You can record whatever you want. You can do it in your bedroom. You can put it online that day.
Yeah.
You can, advertise it on social media, all that stuff. So, now you're in an era not only where you're trying to compete with everyone else like you did 20 years ago, but now there's 500,000 more people doing the same thing. So how do you get your name out there in this weird place we're in, where everyone is trying to do that? Everyone wants to be famous. Everyone wants to be, not saying that you're doing this to be famous, but
No. Everyone
wants to sort of get themselves out there and have people hear their music. And then there's so many more, people waving their hands in the air saying, look at me, hear my stuff.
Yeah. So one thing I want to say is that for anybody who wants to be famous that's listening, anonymity is highly underrated. As a guy who, whose face was on Much Music 3 to 4 times a day in the heyday of Jet Set, I had just a small piece of what actual celebrities would encounter on the daily, and it certainly wasn't for me. Like, I don't care for it, but it's more just about actually getting people listening to your music, because you're not making it in a complete silo. I mean, you do it for yourself, but you do hope that there's somebody that it connects with. But in terms of how you promote yourself, I mean, I'd say that's part of the learning curve for us. None of us is really that type of influencer that's going to go on, TikTok, like talking to camera, about our band and
Yeah.
So, you know, that's such a huge part of the culture now. What people want to see behind the curtain. And I'm still very much, you know, from that age of music listening where there was like a wonderful sense of mystery about some of the artists that we were into. And so I guess we're probably trying to bridge the gap a little bit. I mean, we've been pretty active on the socials and trying to, I guess, establish a voice there too, that feels, you know, genuine, without being too selly. You know, it's really very tough. I won't lie. And standing out, I mean, I think it really is just building fans one at a time, you know, networking to some degree with bands that you like, you know, in the cities that you
definitely,
you know, in the city and the country that you're operating in, so that you can support each other and to build bridges there. That's about all I know how to do. Like, honestly, it's like, it's going to be very, very organic and over a long period of time. And we're okay with that, you know, because like I said, we don't have any inclination of like signing a record deal and doing this full time. We all have day jobs and, it's more than a hobby. I think about this band every day. You know, it's something that, is important to us, but I don't know how to, you know, I don't think there's any silver bullet at this point, in terms of getting your music listened to. It's just a little bit of everything, and whoever, you know, will hear you out, have you on, you know, give you a spotlight of any kind, and you just hope for the best. You hope that, people that like this genre of music or whatever end up finding it. But if you don't do it, they can't find it. So,
yeah.
You know, one of the magical things about music that I found in this time of, you know, like you said, streaming services and everything, which is, again, you know, I'm a diehard for the album format. You know, I have 2,500 CDs and maybe close to 1,000 vinyl myself. So I'm definitely like, you know, an audiophile and an album guy. And I wish that if I had a time machine, I'd go put a bullet in someone's head, like for creating iPods and iPhones shit, and it's garbage. And it's ruined the experience, but you know, there are some pluses that have come out of it. I always say, you know, the reemergence of vinyl is kind of that equal and opposite reaction to like no physical media, largest physical media, you know?
Definitely.
So that's been awesome.
Sound.
Talking about getting yourselves out there, and I think it is, like, I mean, as we've just sort of been talking about for the last few minutes,
it's
kind of a crapshoot, right? I mean, you hope that the right people hear it, and those people tell their friends, come out to shows, share a video, you know, put it on a playlist, whatever they do, and then it's kind of just you go from there, rather than having any kind of you said there's no silver bullet, right? It's just kind of you put it out there and do what you can to promote it and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I remember now what I was going to say. It was like, you know, in this weird time of streaming services and everything, you put songs out there and you never know what's going to happen. And I always say they have this kind of life of their own. And, you know, whether that's through, you know, these tendrils that go out, whether you are lucky enough to get a licensed in a, you know, TV show or movie or something like that, those can be really, really fruitful for finding new fans and turning new people onto your music. And sometimes you don't even know why. Like, I think it was last year or the year before, all of a sudden, two songs off Jet Set's third indie released album started to go wildfire.
Oh, wow.
And our distributor reached out to us and said, do you know any reason for this? And said, not really. Like, they were licensed in a show, but like, not like many years ago. Like, it's, they'd be, maybe it got syndicated somewhere or added to a streaming service. People were listening, all of a sudden watching. Don't really know, but we were all of a sudden getting like 35,000 streams a day, which,
wow.
You know, again, like being like humble and grounded enough, you know, I know that that's not a lot kind of for probably a lot of people that are on YouTube. But for me, the marker is like when we were on a label with Jet Set in the early 2000s, and you had Much Music and you had, you know, two songs in heavy rotation on rock radio, what that effectively meant was you were like, we were in the same ranks as, like, we'd be sandwiched on the charts between bands like Red Hot Chili Peppers and Foo Fighters and AC/DC.
Yeah.
So we were getting, and we, that meant in Canada getting spun 300 to 350 times a week. And now you're talking about a global audience, and songs that we recorded in my friend's living room were getting spun or streamed 35,000 times a day. Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Just out of nowhere too.
Yeah. Out of nowhere. And from all, and with no like geographic explanation either. It was from all over. And, you know, is it the algorithm gods just smiling on us? You know, maybe, I don't know, but like they've continued to go. And to this point, actually with Jet Set, those songs are now our biggest songs, not the ones that we had videos for them at Much Music and got all that record label promotional push, as superficial as it may have been. You know, that was like sustained pressure through the traditional media. All that has been eclipsed by some sort of blip in the algorithm. And so I actually have people coming up to me and they don't mention, you know, the two songs that were big with that band were Best Way to Die and Baby Cool Your Jets. And they mention other songs to me now when they were into me on the street or something, and it blows my mind, you know? So I'm still here for that. I'm still here for that kind of stuff. Like, lot of people play the lottery. It's like, I'll write and record songs and put them out and just, you know, not make millions, but at least connect with people, have those kinds of things happen that put a little spring in your step for the week or whatever, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So it's got to be gratifying too, that people are hearing the stuff that maybe you didn't realize was being as enjoyed as the big hits too, right? I mean, so the fact that someone's, they didn't do it the traditional way by going through the album and it's listening to the album tracks, but they found it somehow and it's obviously working for them.
Totally. And just like, you know, you just like see these stats too. Like one of the great things about being independent and, you know, with the streaming services is like Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon and all that, YouTube for artists, they all have this back end with like amazing amounts of data on like where people are listening, you know, like especially with a platform like Apple Music, they also own Shazam. So they can tell you how many Shazams and you see, you're like, oh, like, you know, the song Lady Killer has been is celebrating like 100 all-time Shazams in Kazakhstan. And you're like, that's just so wild. Like for a guy who like writes, you know, started writing songs on the side of his childhood bedroom bed, you know, in Winnipeg, North Kildonan, it's like, that's outstanding. So, you know, as long as you kind of, I guess, you know, it's hard to make a living at this now. The window's tighter than it's ever been. I got just like a tiny taste of it, I suppose. Feel super fortunate for that. And you know, miss that sort of bygone era when things were more viable for musicians. And I worry that, I mean, I think we've seen the drop off in quality to some degree. And because, you know, it was weird. I remember, I think it was the band Shout Out 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 or Clap Your Hands Say Yeah, I can't remember, but I remember reading an article like in Exclaim or Chart and it was still around and they were quitting because they were like, yeah, we can't make a living doing this. And it was, you didn't normally see articles like that where bands would split, like, you know, usually be like irreconcilable differences between each other or the record label or something, but they were like, yeah, we can't do this anymore. And, you know, these otherwise sort of fantastic bands, Aubijou out of Toronto was another one where they're just like, yeah, we can't afford to be a band anymore. And it's like, geez, that sucks. Like, you know,
it does suck, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're lucky enough to at least have a day job you don't hate and you can still do the stuff on the side, you know, there's definitely like some emotional collateral or dividends that you can kind of, you know, keep in your heart and just have for yourself.
For sure. So if someone wants to hear Omens, if they haven't heard you yet, I mean, the good thing about this being a podcast, someone could hear it the day it comes out. They could hear it a year from now. I've been doing this for like 10 years now. Yeah. So there's so many episodes. It's going to be around. I can't stop at this point. So if someone's hearing this at some point in the future, what's the best way to track you down and find out what you're up to? Maybe by then you have new records out. Who knows, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have a website. It's not, you know, super comprehensive, but it's omensrocks.com. You can also look us up on the socials. You know, we're on Instagram, Facebook, and unfortunately TikTok. I'm not quite sure how to do that yet, but yeah, anyway, we're making the best of it. Yeah, Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, YouTube, Tidal, all those.